Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
It's an earth-shattering revelation. Aliens are real and making contact all around us. Rena Cutter, however, is busy dealing with her own private world-shattering. Even if the alien news does hit very close to home, it has nothing on the shock of losing her mother. Please enjoy Marissa Lingen's reading of her story from our November-December issue, Grief, As Faithful as My Hound.
The first alien ship landed when my mother was in the bleak, slow middle days of hospice care, not awake enough to tell stories and jokes together, not singing with me anymore, just eating a little pudding, butterscotch, banana, chocolate, going back to restless sleep. I had never watched television news, had always read it on the internet instead, but one of the nurses, Lauren, sometimes turned on a baseball game, for a distraction, she said. My mother would smile if she woke up and saw a picture she thought was a cutie. But then she fell right back to sleep. She didn't wake up when the Twins-White Sox game was interrupted with news that the alien ship had landed in the courtyard of a large family home in Sri Lanka. None of the astronomers had seen it coming. No one had predicted it at all. I stared blankly, flatly, at the screen, as though it had shown me a first-ball change-up, nothing of particular note. I glanced over at my mother. She was still sleeping. "Mom," I whispered. Nothing. "Mom!" The announcers were full of the kind of speculation that said nothing at all. Could be, might mean, seems to be. And the only thing they had identified was that the Leonage family lived there. "Leave the Leonages alone," I muttered. Lauren cocked her head. "I wonder why they chose Sri Lanka." Deshmi, the next nurse on shift after her, shrugged. "Lots of people in Sri Lanka. Lots to choose from." I nodded. "The government. A coalition, I eventually understood, of world governments, flew in and attempted to put a biohazard containment tent around the ship and the Leonage family home, until we understood whether the aliens were some kind of threat to the Earth's biosphere. This seemed like hard luck to the Leonages." It didn't matter. Something alien ate through the containment tent. It evaporated and was gone. Eventually, hours later, the coverage of the baseball game resumed. The aliens were not going anywhere, and the White Sox and Twins were in a pennant race. My mother woke up. She blinked and smiled when I told her aliens had landed. I had joked with her about so many outrageous things over the years. I think she thought this was another. I cried in the bathroom where she wouldn't see. I slept in the armchair, restless, the television on but muted. The news eventually reported that Chitauri Leonage had had a baby just the day before. It caught a glimpse of an orange blob sliding out of the ship and into the house. The White Sox won the game, 4-3. My mother refused the oatmeal I tried to give her in the morning. I ate it myself. When she was still full of her forceful opinions, my mother had insisted that we find her a hospice with the best mushy food available. It had been days since she'd said anything more forceful than, "That's nice," but in the stress of her slow death, I appreciated the mushy food. It went down easier. Deshmi and Lauren kept trying to get me to eat something, to go for a walk. I didn't have the strength to argue, so I swallowed, paced, obeyed. The next day, another saucer landed in Beja, Portugal. I was too busy focusing on my mother refusing to eat any applesauce to remember what I said, what the nurses said, what the TV said. It had been a full 24 hours since my mother had spoken, when my saucer landed. By this time, the third example, the world governments had completely given up on the containment tents. I was not looking out the window. It didn't land on our side of the building anyway. My mother's breathing had just started to rattle, and the nurses said it was nothing urgent, all part of the process. But if you've been there, if you've sat by the side of someone you love when they start that harsh gurgle, it feels significant. You can't help but react to the last stages of the life of someone you love. In my mother's case, another of the last stages, though not one with any cause or effect, was an orange alien about as high as my thigh, showing up in the doorway of her room. It was a blob without fixed shape, more or less a gumdrop. I don't know how long it was there before I noticed it. The smell of it, like a ripe banana, didn't hit me immediately. There were a lot of bananas around the hospice. Staff and families and patients all ate them, and I had no particular reason to look down. Finally, I realized the staff had crowded outside, staring and murmuring. Not at me or my mother, at the visitor. My teenage self had watched old science fiction movies and prepared dozens of stirring first contact speeches. What I actually said to this alien, past my mother's rattling breath, was, "Oh." It said nothing. If it was trying to communicate, I couldn't tell. "Well, come on in, I guess. Make yourself comfortable," I said. "We're not doing much here, are we, Mom?" I don't think the alien was listening. It didn't respond that I could see. Eventually it came in, closer, but not close enough to touch me or Mom, so I didn't feel like I had to do anything to repel boarders. What I could have done, I didn't know. Maybe the alien touching me would have gotten through the weird calm that had taken over, and I would have had some kind of screaming breakdown. Every once in a while, one of the families did. Less than you'd think. Lauren sidled past the alien in the doorway. "Oh my God, can you believe this?" she said. "Right now I can't believe anything," I said. "Yeah," she said. She put a hand on my shoulder and looked at Mom. Do you think the alien... Thinking is not my strong suit right now. I don't know if my alien's ship appeared on the news, or if Lauren texted the secondary contacts in Mom's file that I would need support, or what. But my best friends Lloyd and Kirsty showed up that night. They had sandwiches and over-salty deli pickles, the sorts of things we'd been eating together since college. Lloyd unwrapped an extra and set it down on the floor next to the alien. "I didn't know what your guest liked, so I brought sun-dried tomato chicken." I finished washing my hands in the room's sink. "I don't know that our biology is even compatible, Lloyd." "That's what I told him," said Kirsty. "But you know Mr. Friendly here." I tried to smile. It was entirely possible that my mom would die while I ate my pickle. It was entirely possible that the alien would say something profound about its purpose here, or leave, or destroy life as we knew it. Life as I personally knew it was pretty screwed anyway. I ate my pickle. Kirsty picked at her sandwich, trying not to look at Mom or the alien. "So, did you put out a signal? Did you work with SETI, or..." I sighed. "No, I did not have some kind of secret alien bat signal to bring them to me. I promise you'd have known." "Then..." She didn't want to ask what all the hospice staff had been tiptoeing around wondering. Why me? Why us? Was it there for me or Mom? How did it choose? Just when I was shortest on answers, the questions were multiplying. Lloyd and Kirsty exchanged those looks they'd developed, that marital telepathy that had thankfully never gotten in the middle of our friendship, and they switched to pleasant conversation to fill the silences. Their kids, work, their neighborhood barbecue. It felt like it had been decades since I'd been able to contribute to a pleasant conversation. Really, it had only been weeks, a month or two at most. I stroked my mother's limp hand, absently. We stared at the alien. Eventually, they had to relieve Kirsty's dad, who was babysitting the kids. They thought I might go home, too, but we were past the time when I was willing to leave my mother for longer than bathroom breaks. The thought of getting a telephone call from a nurse saying that Mom died alone filled me with dread, so there was nothing I could do that would change things for her. All I'd needed to say, I'd said over and over again. But still I could be there. And so, apparently, could the gumdrop blob along the wall, silent, wobbling. Lloyd cried when they left. Kirsty pulled his hand reluctantly. The night nurse came in with Mom's dose of pain meds. It was as close as any of us would come to a clean transition. They went home. The alien and I stayed. Years, decades of watching movies and reading stories had given me an expectation that at some point the alien would speak, would attack or hum or something, would make patterns in the carpet that I could react to. That didn't happen. I dozed in the chair, woke and squeezed my mother's hand, stared at the shadow of the alien on the wall. In the gray light that creeps up before the colors of sunrise, my mother's breathing slowed and rattled to a stop. The room was silent. The nurse had to get a doctor to come and pronounce her dead, which felt anticlimactic. I kept holding her hand anyway. I smoothed her forehead, which was smoothing itself, with the last of the pain gone from it. I had cried myself dehydrated weeks ago, despite the nurses and my friends and their attempts to keep me fed with alien-smelling bananas, the applesauce Mom wasn't eating, endless cups of water. I found room for more tears anyway. For relief, and for racking tears. "Well, say something," I said, and the doctor said, "I'm so sorry for your loss." But I wasn't talking to her. The alien said nothing. I took a little white plastic bag full of Mom's things I would never use, a pair of slipper socks, a book of crossword puzzles, and I signed some paperwork, and I went home. The alien went with me. I didn't open the passenger door of my car for it, but it slipped through the crack in the door, settled in the passenger seat. I sat in the hospice parking lot with the key in the ignition, wan early morning sunlight streaming through the car windows on the alien and me. Its ship was still parked on the lawn.
"So this is what we're doing now," I said.
No response. I smacked the steering wheel and shouted, "Fuck!" When I hit the steering wheel a second time, I accidentally hit the horn, which made me jump. The alien didn't flinch. Possibly they don't have that reflex. Possibly it's fine if they get run into by another organism. They just deform, or I didn't know what. I had no idea what orange blob biology was like. Possibly it wasn't even an alien itself, it was just a drone or something, I didn't know. I drove myself home. When I put my hand on the doorknob in from the garage, I thought, this is the house I lived in when my mother died, and I almost couldn't go inside my own house. I managed, stumbling, crying. I didn't bother slamming the door on the alien, seeing what had happened with the car. It whizzed genteelly in after me and settled in the kitchen. My house smelled stale and empty. Alien bananas improved it. There hadn't been anything but condiments and staples in the kitchen for weeks. I was more exhausted than I knew I could be. It was not yet 7 in the morning, and I had to call my cousins, my uncle and my aunt, my friends, Mom's friends. I had to post to social media, an email, and do all the modern forms of death. I would have to eat food, wash clothes, arrange a cremation, write a eulogy, figure out when I was going back to work. I stepped around the alien, walked into my bedroom, and face planted on the bed. When I woke up again, it was mid-morning. The sun did not seem any stronger, and the alien was in the bedroom with me. Thankfully, it was not on the bed. I found a disgusting protein bar in the pantry, something that claimed to be blueberry cheesecake and should have been ashamed of its lies. My college lab partner had sent them when he heard that my mother was dying. People wanted to help. I choked it down with lots of swallows of water. I made the phone calls. People made all the right noises. The alien did not make noises. My mother's pastor came over. I had not asked her to, but there she was, sensible flat shoes and bobbed hair and soft, comforting voice. She did not need to talk to me about Jesus, which was a relief. The alien, however, took her by surprise.
"Someone told me," she said, "but I guess I thought..."
"No, still here," I said.
"How are you with all... I'm sorry, I have..."
She barked out a quick laugh, then looked horrified at herself. I wanted her to laugh. I wanted to laugh. Mom loved laughing. I wanted to believe we were going to laugh all the time, even without her. Even with aliens. She composed herself. "Sorry, loads of practice with grieving families, no practice with aliens. But you had asked about dates for the funeral. But my neighbor, who hates my lawn flamingos, banged on the door to tell me there was an alien ship on both our lawns, and could I get the alien to park on just my lawn, or maybe not anybody's lawn, because she was not sure it was in the Homeowners Association contract to have aliens, and she would have to check, but she thought..." Mom's pastor took her back outside, and they had a little talk. I tried not to look like I was watching through the front window. Mom's pastor came in, looking grim. "That's a piece of work, that person," she said. "But I think we got it sorted. So, the funeral." It is a very strange feeling to point at a day on your calendar and say, "That is the day of my mother's funeral, that day right there. You can write it in, and there it will be." It is not made less strange to write that in, shake hands with the pastor, awkwardly wonder whether you should hug her, and then have her bless the blob that is lurking in the corner of your living room, whose ship she has had to talk the neighbor out of yelling about. My friends have been taking care of my yard for me. At least with an alien ship parked on it, there would be less yard work to catch up on. I realized I should have saved some of the calls until after I'd scheduled the funeral, because I had to do it again, time and location. I had started to get texts and DMs and emails back. It was all piling up, mostly condolences, but some had heard about the alien. Journalists wanted to know about the alien. Lloyd and the kids let themselves in while I was answering things. They've had a key for ages. and the sound of them made me relax, until I realized what Nigel's 7-year-old voice was actually piping, which was, "Is Mom going to hit that man?" I dropped my phone on the alien. It bounced off rather than dropping through, which was obscurely a relief, and ran to the front window. "No, Nige, no, it's fine. Mom's fine," said Lloyd, in his least convincing performance ever. We could all hear Kirsty through the window. "Grieving, don't you understand that? Have some human goddamn decency and get the hell off her property." "If you're a family friend, can we interview you?" said one of the journalists. There were journalists on my lawn, with cameras and drones circling the spaceship. "Sure, here's the quote. Rena Cutter has experienced a terrible loss and cannot explain the alien presence at this time. She appreciates your respect of her privacy while she grieves for her mother, Carrie." Kirsty stalked into the house and slammed the door. "Mom, who was that? Are they going to put Aunt Ree on TV?" "Not if I can help it," said Kirsty grimly. "Alana, stop poking the alien." I whirled around. Alana, the 12-year-old, was nudging the alien with her forefinger, her expression coolly considering. The alien did not react, but I still didn't want to lose any pieces of my almost niece to a random, uninvited life form. "It's not doing anything," Alana reported. "We see that," said Lloyd wearily. "Neither am I, but you don't poke me," I said. "That's different, Aunt Ree. You're messed up because of Grandma Cutter." I closed my eyes, but the tears came anyway. "True enough," I managed. Alana flung herself at me in a spasm of adolescent guilt. "I'm sorry, I just thought..." "No, you're absolutely right. I am completely messed up over Grandma Cutter. It's okay to say it out loud." Nigel tackle-hugged me, and we piled into a group hug filled with snot and tears, the alien forgotten for the moment. They'd brought food, but they left it in the car when they saw the journalists, so Kirsty had to run the gauntlet again to fetch it in. Milk and eggs and orange juice, apples, brownies, lasagna, bread and tuna salad for sandwiches, things that I could eat, things that I could share when people came over. Nothing that smelled of alien/bananas. I had enough of that. They unpacked it into my kitchen. They told stories about my mom. The kids told me about school and violin lessons and pottery class. It was almost impossible to keep the kids from poking the alien again. Alana, having been told not to poke it with her finger, wanted to circle back again with a fork, a chopstick, or a paper towel. "This alien doesn't mind," she insisted. "Come on, you know how annoying it is when Nigel is messing with you," I said. "What if the alien really likes it?" said Nigel. "What if the alien wants to be painted with ice cream?" "We will never know," said his mother firmly. "But yes, you can have ice cream," I said. "You brought some, go ahead." Maybe the alien did want to be painted with ice cream. Maybe the alien wanted to be included in a family hug with tears and snot. Maybe the alien just wanted to watch human grief and figure out what it was all about. We'd had thousands of years of humanity, and I wasn't sure we knew what it was all about ourselves. Maybe the alien could tell us. Someday, after lurking in the corner of my living room for days or years or decades. I felt hollowed out that night, scooped out and left to melt. The alien following me into the bedroom again did not help. I turned on the television for noise, for comfort. I was used to living alone, but I often called my mother to say goodnight. The thought of never again calling my mother to commiserate about the baseball score, or the latest idiocy in national politics, made me feel like the bottom had fallen out of something, and I couldn't see how deep it went. I was tired of crying. I was tired of everything. I cried anyway. The TV news was talking about the scientists trying to study the second alien. It kept slipping through their equipment, determinedly eluding them, to accompany the Portuguese teenager it had selected. More had arrived after mine, 7 in total now. None of them had made any detectable effort to communicate. They each stayed with a person. The pictures from the second one were close-ups. It was also orange. I could almost smell the bananas through the screen. "Turn the light out, William," I said to the alien. Of course it did not. I knew it would not. It was the sort of stupid thing you say when you're wretched. I turned my own light out. The drones lit the night outside my window. The alien went with me to the mortuary the next day. So did one of the journalists. When I opened the car door in the parking lot, there she was, eager and immediate. "Miss Cutter, I'm with your public radio affiliate," she said, "and I think that a few questions for our listeners would make all the difference in the world." "My mother would still be dead," I said.
She opened and closed her mouth stupidly. I wished I could pop a gumdrop in it.
So it won't really make a lot of difference to me.
Our listeners are wondering.
You're not going to report on the death of Carrie Cutter, I said. She was a baseball fan. She taught high school theater and English. Her death isn't news to anybody but me and her friends. I'm going in to handle that now. Apparently the goo in the passenger seat is going with me. She opened her mouth again, but I went on. I don't honestly know what will happen if you try to stop it. I think not much, if the reports before mine were any indication. They just sort of go on.
But why?
She wailed. I blinked at her. She thought she got to wail. She thought she got to be upset, because there was a puzzle she couldn't solve. Because she didn't get to present the world with a scoop. Because she could not make her public radio affiliate the center of world affairs and herself a name in history books. Because of the news. Because of the universe.
Well, we all wailed because of the universe, I guess.
My mother is dead, I enunciated. I only got one mother, and now I don't have any. And my alien companion, bodyguard, tail, this alien, whoever the hell it is going with me to talk to the mortician about my mother, and you are not. You are staying the hell out here, and I bet morticians know a little something about making people stay the hell out.
Another car pulled into the parking lot.
It had tinted windows.
Fancy.
Shit, I said. I hurried into the mortuary. The public radio journalist was fast, but I was faster, and the mortician, a petite redhead, was ready to grate, "I'm sorry, ma'am," and slammed the door shut behind me. The journalist tried to grab the alien, but it came in through the crack in the slammed door. Typical.
The mortician, whose bobbed hair was much warmer in color than my alien, looked down at it.
"Are you okay with this one?"
I sighed. I don't know if you've been watching the news, but I can't really stop it from following me. It doesn't seem to leave crud on the carpet, so there's that.
Okay, said the mortician.
She knew I was coming. She'd had time to brace herself that it wasn't just me.
Okay, I think we're gonna need some special services, though. Security, maybe?
I sighed.
Yeah, probably.
She carefully did not touch me, but instead folded her own hands in front of her, a gesture she'd probably done a million times. But this time it was for my personal space. I liked this mortician. She knew what she was doing.
I'll vet the security personally. Make sure they're not going to ask you stupid questions. This is hard enough without...
She looked at the alien skeptically.
Without Area 51, gawkers.
It's your mom, you said on the phone?
Yeah, Carrie Cutter. We have a conference room that's interior to the building. We can go through some options without...
She glanced out the window. All that out there. I didn't want an urn with the American flag on it, or a beautiful meadow, or anything, really. I didn't want an urn at all. I just wanted them to cremate my mom and give me the cardboard box so I could plant her ashes under a tree, which the nice red-headed mortician said was perfectly legal. I wondered if the alien would crawl in with her. It seemed like no. It seemed like the alien was staying with me. It felt like I sometimes wanted to crawl in with her, but that was another problem. I went home and did all the things that are supposed to make you feel better and do not. I picked up pictures of my mom and music for the service. I sent an email to the theater group she'd volunteered with and senior lady softball team she'd pitched on. I did everything I could, and it was woefully inadequate. I ate a random assortment of food that people put in front of me, cheeseburger soup, Hawaiian sandwiches that bore no particular relation to any Hawaiian island known to humanity. I would have taken the alien grocery shopping for something more to my liking, but I couldn't imagine liking anything to eat, even the ice cream Lloyd and Kirsty had supplied. And anyway, there were the journalists. The random humans were almost worse. The police finally set up a cordon around my house, and I gave them a list of people to let in. I had to keep adding to the list when my grieving brain kicked back in and reminded me of more people I'd actually want to see. Biologists and physicists and anthropologists from local colleges all wrote me impassioned letters about advancing human knowledge.
Maybe. Sure. After the funeral.
Local religious leaders who weren't mom's pastor, fine, if they needed to stare.
After the funeral.
Politicians, I was a little more iffy on that, but definitely not before the funeral. My life was divided into before and after the funeral. Everyone else's lives were divided into before and after the aliens, and I was the one actually living with an alien. One of the worst things about losing my mother was that no one else felt it as central. Not even Lloyd and Kirsty and the kids. Not even my other relatives. No one. They were sad for her. They cried. But it wasn't the middle of anyone else's world. People were not stopping in the middle of their day and thinking of the random joke about rutabagas and crying. They were not remembering the trip to Quebec City and crying. They were not remembering how she did the voices when she read breadcrumbs aloud and crying. That was all just me. And in some sense, I guess, my alien. I didn't know what was going through its head, or its extremities, or its external processor, or whatever. But everything I did was centered on Mom, and everything the alien did was centered on me, so it was almost the same. Not quite close enough, but I could sort of pretend. I found I needed to pretend. That across all the universe, my mom's death was important enough for at least me and one orange blob to focus on nothing else. To just be taken up and overwhelmed by it. And if the alien couldn't say anything about the experience, that was okay. I was having trouble putting it into coherent words myself. I said, "Damn it, Mom," a lot, but the alien didn't seem to mind. The day of the funeral would have been surreal, even without my new orange shadow, without the crowds that wanted to follow it. There's the moment when you're dressed and ready, and then what? It's not exactly a good time to bake muffins, or start knitting a sweater, or watching a new show. Nothing you read is going to stay in your brain. You can't really do chores, all dressed up and ready for a funeral. I played a cell phone game with jellyfish. I kept losing. Apparently I wasn't getting enough of dealing with blobs and failing to connect with them. I thought I had everything arranged to get through the funeral coherently, but the first problem was, where was the alien going to go? I wanted to sit between Kirsty and my aunt. I did not want to sit next to the alien. The alien solved this for us by sitting at my feet like a dog. There was a drone camera above the skylight at my mom's church, taking a picture of me sitting there, sobbing my eyes out with my alien in front of me. I hated that drone camera as much as I'd ever hated anything in my life. Nigel bounced off the alien to jump up in my lap. Only about half the mourners saw him, but the pastor nearly fell over in shock. Nigel did not care. He just snuggled his hard little head into my shoulder and his tiny butt into his mom's lap, and we did the rest of the service that way, hoisting him up when we were supposed to stand, nestling him back down like a much younger kid when we sat down again. He took my hand when we walked out, me and Nige and the alien. Nigel went through the lunch line and filled me a plate with jello and brownies, and nothing nutritious. And it was fine, it was terrible, everything was both fine and terrible. People came up to tell me how sorry they were, how great my mom was. But then they looked at the alien and trailed off and didn't say anything else. I wish they'd stuck around and told stories about her. I expected her theater buddies would. But just having the alien there stopped them. They edged away. It wasn't even mid-afternoon before almost everyone was gone, and I was sitting in a folding chair picking a napkin to bits and staring at the mostly empty room. Lloyd came and turned another chair around and sat with me, acknowledging the alien as no one else did. "So that thing really screwed this up, huh?" I tried to laugh. I guess. Wasn't like it was going to be a great time anyway. Lloyd leaned forward earnestly. "Rena, do you think it's a metaphor?" I blinked at him. "For your grief," he elucidated. "I think it's an alien, Lloyd. Your kid jumped on it. You can poke it if you think it'll make you feel better about metaphors." "But that it should show up just as your mother was dying." I sighed. "Look, I don't know. Maybe they chose humans with big life stuff. The lady in Sri Lanka, the Leonagi lady, she was having a baby. My mom was dying. I don't know about everybody else. It's a big world. I've had a few things going on. Maybe the aliens pick people like that. Or maybe..." I had to drink some water. Lloyd was clearly dying to hear what I had to say. There was nothing like a funeral for pointing out how many of those expressions we have. "Dying to hear," "these shoes are killing me," "she's so hilarious it just slays me." I went on. "Maybe the aliens just pick people. Just people. And there's always something, because that's what being human is. Maybe whoever you picked would have had death or birth or falling in love or a new job or moving or... I don't know. It seems like there's always something. Kirsty and I don't have something." I snorted. "Sure, if you'd had an alien join up with your chaos circus, you'd totally say, 'We have nothing going on. We're just going to put our feet up and stream videos with this here alien. Howdy.' I become a hick when aliens land?" I ran a hand through my hair, which was already not its best after a day of funeral. "You stay yourself when aliens land. So,
life, but with aliens.
He eyed the orange blob.
You figuring this thing out, then?
I am not even figuring the human thing out yet, Lloyd.
He squeezed my shoulder.
Same, buddy.
Same.
The funeral security helped. The reporters did not go away. The gawkers did not go away. There were even some people who were sure that the aliens could cure their diseases, which was pretty funny considering when and how mine had shown up. I decided to let a journalist from a favorite website come in for an interview, and a very small, select group of scientists. I was a little afraid that would open the floodgates and people would surround my house, but the gates were already open. I read more news stories. The scientists in my house didn't seem to be learning anything more than the others worldwide. There were now 117 aliens, each following one human. With the first few, the scientists tried to find some kind of correlation, some point of commonality. By the time it was over 50, they just stopped. Some people get aliens. Maybe it'll be everybody someday. Maybe not. They didn't seem to eat anything, drink anything. Nobody detected them breathing, communicating. For all we could prove, they might not be alive. Then again, they might. I was able to let my guard down a little. After the funeral, there wasn't a big public event, so I could use minimal security for watching who I let in and out, making sure no one broke in. And after that, I was even less careful. One day I got a letter asking if I would be willing to meet with another alien in their person. Tomas Navarro was the second person to receive an alien visitor, a 19-year-old Portuguese kid without much of a life path. Now he had received funding to travel the world talking to others who were followed by aliens. Would I be willing to speak to him? I shrugged. Sure, okay. He didn't need a translator. His English was excellent. He said he'd gotten translators for about half of the others. What are they like? I asked.
Like everything, he said. Like anything. Like people.
They're doing the things people do.
You heard that the first one had a baby.
Well, she's tending a very tiny baby, she and her family, like you'd expect.
I suppose they'd have to.
Her mother-in-law is very worried about whether aliens are toxic to the babies, he said solemnly, and I smiled.
I didn't have that problem.
He gave me a sober nod.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about your mother. We have, he checked his cell,
3 other losses. No parent losses.
I'm glad to be special, I said weakly. I looked over at my alien. I realized I couldn't tell the difference between mine and his. After all these weeks together, I wanted to know. I wanted to have an instinct, a deep feeling of togetherness, which one had been there when my mother died and all the times after. Instead, they were just 2 orange blobs, side by side on the floor. If they were sharing information with each other, talking or fighting or even acknowledging each other, I couldn't see it.
Do you think... Are you finding anything else? Are we all... Do we all...
I couldn't find a way to say what I wanted to say. I wanted there to be some reason, something explicable, when nothing felt like it was.
He looked lost and much younger.
I have made questions you can answer? About what you eat, what you do for fun, for work, your family?
I do not have much hope. I think it goes nowhere.
Mine goes nowhere.
I mean...
I know. I was trying to joke.
I see.
I cocked my head and looked at him, a frustrated kid traveling the world on someone else's dime just to figure out his blobby pal.
What were you going to do before?
Maybe engineering, he said.
Structural engineering. I don't know.
It was the latest thing I thought of trying.
Learning ways to design for coastal workers, for their houses, how do you say, people who move things at the docks?
Stevedores.
Ah, stevedores.
In places where the weather at the water is harsh, I wanted the sturdy housing.
Maybe you should go back to that, I suggested. At least you can make sense of it.
He stared out my window at my alien's ship.
I want sense of something.
I knew the feeling, but I was the wrong person to help him. I thawed one of the not-Hawaiian sandwiches out of the freezer and toasted it for him before he left. He ate it so quickly that I gave him another.
Teenagers.
I was glad to use up the sandwiches. I wanted to find common cause with him. But I couldn't even really find a way to formulate questions about our aliens. You know, how it feels when you're in the bathroom brushing your teeth and they're there? Or did you ever accidentally trip on yours and get grossed out by how springy it can be and wonder how they fit through cracks in doors? Because, well, that's all there was, really. They're there. They're there. He knew, but what was there to say about it? He knew they were there, but he was trying to make it make sense, and I couldn't do that. So we went on together, the alien and me. I went back to work, and no one knew what to say. But we settled back into meetings, deadlines, projects, and my coworkers learned to talk past the alien. Alana's 13th birthday rolled around, and Lloyd made her an ice cream cake. The alien stayed jellied even as the weather got cold enough that other things that looked like that froze. People told me it would get better, not having my mom, and also that I would still have tough days. I could definitely vouch for the second part. I didn't really know what better looked like. I didn't cry all the time. I cried a lot, though. I slept a lot some days, and then not at all others. People stopped asking how I was doing, and sort of went on with their lives. But for me, it was a constant fact. Holidays came around with holes in them. I'd laugh at a video of a bear on the internet, and then cry because I couldn't send it to Mom. What I remembered of my grandfather's biscuit recipe was what there was, because Mom was not around to check it with. Through it all, the alien was completely impassive. I screamed at it once. I talked to it a lot. After a while, I settled into a rhythm where it was just there, and so was I. And then one afternoon, it left. We were in the library picking up trashy mysteries, which were all I could deal with after Mom's death. High-quality literary mysteries were no good. Only the trashy ones would do. You'd think the murder in them would bother me, but it was nice to have death that had a clear cause and effect. To feel like justice, and even more, reason, would prevail in the universe. Of course the alien had been to the library with me before. It had been to the bank, the post office, the grocery store, the gym. I didn't think there was anywhere that I could go that it wouldn't just keep following. But it left the library. As far as I could piece together, it slurped straight home to its ship and departed. And that was that. "Was it something I said?" I said out loud. But I was at the library, so while some people stared at the alien, no one had really planned to be talking to me. I called Kirsty and Lloyd, and they brought the kids over again. I assured them I was well enough to make dinner, but it was only French toast and fruit. That was fine. The kids loved that. I dropped a quick text to the journalist I'd allowed to report on my story and found that several of the others had left, too, but not all of them. We didn't have any more answers than before, and eventually we all shrugged, and my friends went home. And I tried, again, to get back to my life. The alien never talked to me. It never hummed or vibrated or turned colors or anything, anything at all, that I could interpret as companionship, company, a person. I still had no idea whether it was a person or a drone or some other category entirely. I never heard it breathe. I didn't even really hear it ooze most times. But it was another entity, another presence. Its absence was palpable enough, though I couldn't describe any particular thing it had brought to the table with its presence. After 2 weeks, I couldn't stand it. I started searching on rescue dogs. I thought I might like a golden one, sort of a redhead to remind me of my alien buddy. But because humans are terrible, black dogs are abandoned more than other colors. And there were so many adorable black blobs wagging their tails around the shelters ready for love. The one I eventually brought home was a 2-year-old, soot-colored mutt named Kiefer. It took me less than a day to learn how alien the alien had been. Because Kiefer breathed. Kiefer farted. Kiefer stuck his nose in my hand, and also in my crotch. Kiefer wanted to know what I was doing, and when he followed me from room to room, there was a little tick-tick-tick of his nails on the wood of my floors. He had bright eyes that watched me intently. He chewed up a pillow when I was in the shower. He could not go with me to the grocery store, and he cried when I left. The first time it happened, it surprised me so much, I cried too, and came back inside and cuddled him. Then I had to start over and teach him that this would not work every time. He jumped into bed and nuzzled me when I randomly started crying over the Christmas present Mom got me the year I turned 15, and no, I had no reason to be thinking of that. But Kiefer had no reason to quiz me about the reasons for my emotions or for my outbursts. He just stuck his nose in my face and let me sob it out. Kiefer was so very earthly. I had no idea what the alien had made of me, but what I had made of it was, I needed another life form. And if it came back, it would have to make something of us. I wondered if the orange blob would glide off black dog hair or pick it up. I imagined Kiefer and my alien both following me from room to room. I imagined the alien following Kiefer instead. Maybe the next time there were aliens, they'd let us know. Maybe they'd talk to the dogs. "Hey, buddy, want to go to the park?" I said. Kiefer's ears perked up. I hadn't really thought about how much we shared Earth things until someone didn't, but there was a lot we could figure out as Earthlings together. Already we had Park, and that was okay. We could get through a lot on a little like that. We'd have to.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.